DW Africa Link.
I grew up in a village where the traditional ruler was both a leader and the heartbeat of the people. When he spoke, we listened. When conflict arose, he was the one we turned to. But today, things feel different. Across Cameroon, especially in the Anglophone regions, the once sacred role of traditional rulers are being tested like never before. We are seeing a growing wave of chieftaincy disputes. In some cases, traditional rulers have become targets in the Anglophone conflict. In others, they are accused of becoming too close to political power, acting more like political kingmakers than community guardians. So what changed? Is tradition being compromised by politics, or is it being weaponized by it? And what does all this mean for peace, unity, and identity in local communities? My name is Mimi Mefone. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
The senior divisional officer for FACO in Cameroon's conflicted Southwest region recently issued a warning that traditional rulers who fail to show up for National Day celebrations on May 20th will face sanctions. It is not the first time that administrators had clashed with chiefs or fons. Meanwhile, in many villages across the Anglophone regions, thrones remain empty or contested. In some cases, multiple claimants emerge, each with their own supporters and backed by administrative authorities. In some extreme cases, the disputes have resulted in violence, arrest, and court battles. So, are traditional rulers still serving their people, or are they becoming political instruments? Joining me to discuss this is His Royal Highness Fonzofua III of Babungo in the conflicted Northwest region of Cameroon. He's a prominent traditional ruler from Northwest region and a bureau member of the National Council of Cameroon Traditional Rulers. We also have DW's Moki Edwin Kinzika, who has been covering these issues for years. Can you tell us, Your Highness, how chiefs or traditional authorities are designated in your area?
In Babungo, for example, a chief, a fon, when the reigning fon is alive, he gives his will to his trusted ones, at least three trusted chindas, they call them chindas, who keep the will on oath. So at the disappearance of the new fon, they at once go look for the new king and bring, who therefore perform the rites on his father before he's been carried to his last hiding place. So when that is done, it's still very secret. The village is not aware that the fon has disappeared, and the new chief will just be presented to the administration that this is what the village has decided, and this is what the late fon chose for. This is a person that has been chosen by the late fon to succeed his father.
Just to clarify our audience, that when Fonzofua is talking about the Chindan, Chindan means the kingmakers, and also when he mentioned the disappearance of the fon, it means that the death of the fon. I wanted to just find out whether in this whole process, is it a hereditary kind of a thing where the chief looks at his household, his children, and picks someone who would replace him? Or is it done hand in hand with the administration, or the administration only comes in for paperwork?
The administration only comes in for paperwork. In Babungo, the reigning king chooses the son that will succeed him secretly amongst his children. And choosing of this child depends on there are certain criteria, and most of these criteria fall under the mother. The first question would be, is the mother from Babungo? Does she know the traditions and customs of the Babungo people? The second question would be, is that woman? So the mother has, there's a series of criteria that falls first on the mother. So when the mother fulfills all these criteria and she's from Babungo, we now look at the son, the various children that this woman has. We now see which of the children, is this child quick-tempered? Is this child a thief? Is this child honest? And if that is done, you are now, they now indicate this child, they now show this child to one of the, one or two of the chindas who are on oath, because he can't say it to anybody except the phone has disappeared. Because the phone doesn't die. He disappears, then a new phone will reappear.
Why is the concept disappearing of the phone really an important aspect of the tradition in your area? Where is it coming from? So, just so that people understand what disappearance means.
Yes, the phone is considered to be the most elderly person in the society. The phone disappears because the phone doesn't die. It's an aspect of continuity, because the new phone that will come up will inherit the entire family. If the former phone, permit the term, had debts, he will inherit it. If he had wives, the phone will inherit them. He will take care of everybody equally, just like the late one did. That's why the same respect and honor due to the former phone should be the same respect due to the present phone. That's why the former phone, his face has just changed.
That's interesting. Moki, you've followed the evolution of traditional leadership in Cameroon for so many years now. How would you describe the influence of traditional rulers today, especially in the Anglophone regions of the country?
Now, Mimimifor, it is fast changing from the very influential rulers, those traditional rulers used to be, those leaders used to be, to what many people consider today now as loving stocks. At independence in 1960, Mimimifor, some traditional rulers in Cameroon, like the Sultan of Fumban, the Lamido of Rebuba, the Fons of Mankon, etc., could be compared to an extent with the Ashanti Kingdom of what is now modern-day Ghana. Things are changing so fast, beginning from when democracy returned to Cameroon in 1990s. Some Fons, whom tradition holds are supposed to be neutral, started mingling themselves with partisan politics, most of them supporting Cameroon's ruling political party, and division coming to the families. So a lot of them no longer play that influential role. They are not even respected in some of the times. I mean, a majority of those funds in the northwest region of Cameroon. Well, in other parts of Cameroon, like the far north and the west region, a lot of them still wield authority.
So Your Highness said something quite different, because he said that when it comes to the tradition, morality is key. How do traditional rulers, especially the National Council of Traditional Rulers, ensure neutrality when many of its members are openly aligned with politics, political parties, and appointments, just like Moki said?
Yes, the analysis of Moki is 80% right, but there are some aspects that are not true, because there are still many forms of the Northwest that wield a lot of authority over their people. It is true that politics has come, and it has actually brought down the powers of traditional rulers from the Northwest, especially the Grassfield from Northwest. The reason being that the traditional ruler has been pushed to the wall where he needs to survive by all means. So in order to have power in a Cameroon, you have to be either a mayor, a duo, a member of parliament, a senator, before you can have a say. Just being a normal traditional ruler, you have to reckon with all these politicians in your own community. So if you are unable to put food on your table, if you are unable to take care of the multiple wives your late father left for you, if you are unable to take care of the children, your brothers that they left for you, you find yourself in serious trouble. Worst of all, this Anglophone crisis came up, and it became of not an Anglophone struggle for any liberation whatsoever, but it turned out to be settling of scores, where your brother, who was hoping to be found, finally did not succeed, now finds a fertile ground to carry a gun and and walk in the palace, I'm gunning you down. I'm just the front of my kingdom. I don't occupy any political position in government. So definitely I have nothing to defend here. But I stand to defend what is right. I stand to defend my culture, my people.
But permit me, Your Majesty, to indicate that what you're trying to say is not actually what I observe from the lens of a reporter. Now, Your Majesty, I remember when the crisis in the Northwest and Southwest region started, you were abducted by these Anglophone separatists, by these armed gangs, and taken to the bush. Your Majesty, I remember very well also that your population came out in their numbers, marched on the street, and said no way would their phone be taken to the bush. You were liberated. Am I right, Majesty? Your Majesty?
You are not right. Let me correct you. And the notables who went to perform those rites were adopted. They were taken to the bush. So my population came out. We marched. And I said, we condemn this type of act. I've never been adopted by whosoever.
Your notables were adopted, as you say. Do you know, have you ever tried to find out why your population went to the bush to have them freed? It's because of the fact that you have not been participating in partisan politics. They knew that you were a neutral leader. Now, elsewhere in the Northwest where you're talking about, a lot of them have escaped. They can't go back to their constituency. Look at who they are. They are most of those who have joined themselves in partisan politics, who sing the praises of the one party or the other, especially the ruling party, and the people are against them. They say they don't represent their views. That's why I'm coming to say that quite often the people don't agree with their leaders, not because of the royal decision they have taken, but because of political influence that's coming. I mean, add me, it's not a secret that the Biya regime, more than Cameroon's first leader, Ahmadou Ahidjo, has been using traditional rulers, leading to heated debates on the raison d'etre of such a move. As we speak, several traditional rulers, the Royal Highness just said, are members of the Central Committee of the CPDM party. And what pulls the traditional rulers to accept this political position is power, is money.
Over 200 traditional rulers also recently endorsed President Paul Biya's candidacy. But some critics claim that this politicizes the chieftaincy institution in Cameroon, just like Moki is saying. Do you believe that chiefs should publicly endorse politicians?
I'm sorry to say this. I was there at the Congress Hall. We never voted, or our opinions were never seek. They didn't ask us, where do you stand here and what are you doing? As you can see, there is no elite meeting in the Northwest region. That actually, a national elite meeting where the elites of the Northwest region can come together and put in place policies that can help us. There's none. We are now like orphans. We are living in a situation where one has to use your own head in order to survive. Some traditional rulers, contrary to what Moki is saying, enter into politics not because of fame and money, is because they enter because it's the only way for them to kind of govern their people.
Yes, so Your Highness has just talked about the fund, has just talked about the May 20th scenario in Cameroon. May 20th is the National Unity Day in Cameroon. It's celebrated every 20th of May. And for this year, we are having the Senior Divisional Officer of FACOU has actually threatened to replace chiefs or traditional rulers who fail to mobilize people for the celebrations. But Moki, I want to find out from you, when traditional rulers are forced to publicly support the government, what message does it send to ordinary citizens?
It's overzealousness from the administrative officials. I can call it abuse. Now, an administrative official cannot sit because he's appointed by the central government in Yaoundé, think that traditional rulers are his subordinates. He could just call them. Let me go back to history. I've been failing to talk about this. When the British were in Cameroon during the time of British colonial masters, there's what they call the indirect rule in Cameroon. Those officials came and administered the people through their chiefs, their traditional rulers. Now, in the French-speaking portion of Cameroon, they had what they call direct rule. So they came and impose their will, their thoughts. They say, you are going to dress like this. You are going to eat like this. They did that to the traditional rulers in the French zone. So the culture of the English-speaking people of Northwest and Southwest has been to respect their traditional rulers. And when an administrative official comes, they don't think they're part of that tradition. That is really an abuse. I mean, it goes contrary to the values. It disrespects to traditional institutions. The problems that have also continued in Northwest and Southwest is because the appointed officials think they come and impose on the people and go away. So I really think, maybe for that, it should not be that way.
Yes, Von Zofwa just used a word that caught my attention. He said we are like orphans. It's a powerful word for a traditional ruler to say, especially in the context of Cameroon, where traditional rulers, like Moki is explaining, they are the custodians of tradition. They are the leaders of the people. What I wanted to find out from you is it because of this that administrators have taken it upon themselves to start meddling into local traditions?
I keep telling my colleagues whenever we meet that the power of a traditional ruler should be with your people. The more you stay glued to your people, the more you become more powerful, and the more it becomes very difficult for the administration to enter into your village and mess up everything. And if there's communication between the phone and his people, it is more easier for you to administer them. If you could explain to your people that I want to stand here and become the mayor of this council because of this, because of that, because of the bridges we need to build in the village, because of the roads we need, because of this, because when we bring outsiders from another village to come and be mayor, he will be the one to decide and do everything for his own village and not for your own interest.
Moki, is there any reason why we see a lot of disunity among the funds, which is also facilitating this political interference? Have there been examples also where we've had traditional rulers resisting this interference?
Now, I told you that in the 1990s, before the democratic wind of change blew over Cameroon and Africa, we didn't have much of those stories of interference that brought disunity among funds and so on. Democracy came with its own part. It is not part of African tradition. It came with things that people could just impose and speak as they will and as they wish, and influence decisions that have been taken by the chiefs. That's one of the issues, democracy, the advent of democracy. Secondly, some of the funds themselves, they were drifting from the original virtues of the original issues they came to fight for. They started joining politics, which the African did not think traditional rulers should be joining politics. The Fon just spoke about his colleague wanting to be mayor and explain to the people, no, these are different roles to be played in a society. The mayor should be able to consult with the Fon, and they decide on what could be done. It's not that the fund should be a mayor to be able to decide what is done for the local, for his village or whatsoever. What is so prominent is the areas where government officials have intervened and the people have said no. I think recently in Yemen, in the southwest region of Cameroon, the population went on the street protesting because the SDO, that is the most senior government official in the area, decided to impose somebody as a traditional ruler. The people went and protested on the street. After protesting, they called for consultation, and now I hear Hope Sonny Bai has been appointed or is now the traditional ruler of the area. Places where people see stand and say, no, you are coming to impose this person, we can't. But when the people are already in those positions, it's difficult to remove them because traditionally, Africans don't refuse their traditional rulers.
Looking ahead, what can be done to ensure that traditional leadership retains its legitimacy?
You will be surprised with my answer to say that it's very difficult. We succeeded our fathers in an era where social media, where there is increase of churches, of so-called prophets who come along and they destroy our artifacts, who carry most of our things away and throw them into rivers or burn them in the name of whatsoever. So we are left with one option, that of having a rethink, that of searching in our conscience to be sure that this is exactly what we want for our people. I saw videos of some of our colleagues who go cup in hand. We really need to have a strong House of Chiefs of the Northwest that can reflect our culture. A House of Chiefs where all the phones of the Northwest region will find themselves inside that house. Not like everybody should be a member, but there should be a Northwest Phones meeting that is supposed to kind of work the hard work and give it to the House of Chiefs to chew for consumption. Chewing means putting it through to government for certain things to be enshrined into our laws.
Muki, you want to come in now?
Yes, Mibimifo, I want to add to what the traditional ruler of Babungu in the northwest region of Cameroon has just said, that some of them have as little as $150 per month as salary given by the government. And that with that $150, you are expected to leave your village and come to the nation's capital, Yaoundé, paying your transfer from your pocket, doing meetings. You are expected to, when imposed, attend rallies of the of the political party in power. The people themselves should come back to the drawing table and think. Now, where does the fund, the general, get money from? It is from the contribution of his subjects. That is, they come to the development association, to the quarter meetings, and each day they either carry to the palace food or money or what the fund needs. That tradition is no longer respected. The people should contribute and help their funds to be independent until we start recognizing them as our leaders, contributing to help them. The government or administrative authorities will still come in to divide them, to make them puppets, to make them to be answerable to them. And from there, they can have access to the population.
Yes, as we are having this discussion, I'm just thinking aloud and reflecting why chiefdoms are even supposed to be stratified in Cameroon, where we have the first class, second class, and third class chiefs, when these traditional rulers are representing their people and ruling their communities. These are powerful institutions. Like, could that be the reason why we are having a lot of disrespect and funds being tossed left and right by the so-called separatists who are now in the Anglophone regions of Cameroon? Why we see people now belittling traditional authorities? But that could be a discussion for another day. And just to relax this conversation, I wanted to find out from Your Highness before we take leave of you. Do you know who your successor is already, or is still a secret? Maybe Moki, we could be lucky to know who the next phone of Babungo is going to be.
Maybe every evening I look for my successor. I'm still looking for it every evening.
Okay, that's an interesting one. So thank you so much for joining us, and thank you, Moki, as well for joining us.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Across the continent, traditional authority is being redefined in the shadow of modern state power. Take South Africa, for example. There, traditional leaders still control vast territories and wield considerable influence. Recently, some chiefs have come under fire for using that power to rally votes for political parties, particularly within the ruling ANC. Ahead of elections, it's not uncommon to hear reports of community members being pressured to vote a certain way, or chiefs receiving benefits for political alignment, like what we discussed earlier. At the same time, these leaders remain central to resolving local conflicts, managing land, and preserving cultural identity. Much like in Cameroon, the line between service to the people and loyalty to political authority is increasingly blurred. While South Africa has its own share of challenges, it does offer useful lessons on how traditional leadership can be integrated into a modern political system without being entirely politicized. For instance, the country has the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act, which clearly outlines the powers and responsibilities of chiefs, defining where their authority begins and ends, especially in relation to elected officials. Traditional leaders also sit in formal structures like the National House of Traditional and Khoisan Leaders, where they advise the government on issues affecting rural communities. They are consulted on land use, local development, and cultural matters. But in most cases, they don't make laws or campaign for political parties. So can Cameroon learn from this? That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you're not just a listener, but part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Remember to also follow so that you can catch all the Africa Link podcast episodes. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Kai Nebe. My name is Mimi Mefoneu. Thank you for listening. And until next time, it is bye for now.
DW, made for minds.